Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, May 10th, 2014. This is episode 1081. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Apple or Android device is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and smartphones and home theater and all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to call. Ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. You'll find the phone number there, links to the chat room, and of course, audio and video from previous shows, plus all the questions and answers as we talk. We get them on paper, well, digital paper, and put them on the website. I don't know. Maybe James DeRuvo just writes them on paper, and I don't know how that works, actually. 888-827-5536. Well, let's see what happened in the world of technology while we were away. Oh, just the end of the internet as you know it, but that's okay. We'll survive. I feel like I'm starting to sound like Chicken Little. First, we were going crazy about the FCC's net neutrality issue. And by the way, that vote comes up Wednesday. The vote is merely to publish the rules, which they haven't done yet, and then to give the public 90 days of comment, something like that. 60 plus 30, I think it is. So I'm not sure why they opened the mailbox, except I think they really do want to hear from us. I'm starting to think that this is a more complicated issue than really we can figure out here, because a number of people have said, well, the last thing you want to do is have the FCC declare that the broadband providers are common carriers. In fact, AT&T said, if you do that, it's the end of the internet. Of course, they don't want to be. They know what it's like to be a common carrier. There's a lot more regulation. I don't know if we want a lot more regulation on the internet. All we want is for Comcast and Verizon and AT&T to just not to screw it up. I think that's a fair thing to ask. We shall see. Then there was this court decision on Friday, and I don't think there's been a lot of coverage on it. But it's a little scary, and it's not over yet because I know Google will appeal to the Supreme Court, but Oracle is suing Google. Now, this is going to – I probably shouldn't bring this up, but you know me. I want you to be informed and know all this stuff, even though this one's a little bit of a tricky one. Google created, actually purchased, but continues to distribute and improve upon the Android operating system, which many of us have on our smartphones. You're familiar with that. Probably Android. It's the competitor to iOS from Apple and the competitor to Windows Phone, I guess. But Google based it on Linux, the Linux kernel, and something called Java, which is a programming language that was written almost 20 years ago now, by some folks at a company called Sun Microsystems. And Java has some nice advantages. It's a clean language. You write once, and you can run it on a variety of platforms, and that's nice. That means Android can run on a variety of different hardware and so forth. Google didn't get a license from Sun. Oh, by the way, Sun was sold to Oracle, which now owns Java. They wrote their own or acquired their own version of Java The only thing that they copied was the names that you use to call things, you know, how to open a window and so forth. Because programming languages have these, they call them programmer interfaces or APIs, application programmer interfaces. And these APIs are the way that a program that runs on your Android phone can talk to the operating system and say, open a window for me or, you know, press this button or whatever. So you got to have that. And they did copy, admittedly, they copied the names of these that Java used, but nobody thought, well, that's can't copyright the names of, you can copyright the code, the programming code. You could even patent some of it, which I'm sure it is, but you can't say, don't use my name. Well, Oracle sued and won. Huh. The Federal Appeals Court, reversing a lower court decision, which was in Google's favor. And, of course, this is bad news for Android, although Google, I'm sure, will appeal and so forth. But it might even be worse news for the rest of the internet. If you can prevent other people from using your variable names, your names for your functions, you can pretty much stop anything. The internet relies on the fact that everything all works together like that. It's a very strange court decision. Let's hope the Supremes get this one right. And then also in the news, and I almost don't even want to talk about it, but also in the news is this rumor that Apple might buy Beats. Beats is an interesting story. Dr. Dre, the rap star, I guess has money in it or founded. I don't know who started it. But they make headphones. You've seen them. You've seen all the ads. They make a lot of speakers and headphones. And you know what? That's a good business. That's a very good business because the truth is they're not expensive to make. Nobody knows what's good or bad. So that, you know, if you give them a nice strong bass, everybody goes, that sounds good. And they've sold and put Dr. Dre's name on it. They sell real well. Then Beats bought a music service called Moog about a year ago. And turned on the Beats Music service a few months ago, which has not been a great success. We estimate about 200,000 subscribers, which is nothing compared to Spotify, Google Music, RDO, all the other radio and streaming music services. AT&T has, remember, maybe you've seen the ads have been offering a family plan for Beats Music and stuff. Well, now the rumor Apple's going to buy them for $3.2 billion. I don't even know if I believe that rumor. That's so not, first of all, be the largest by far acquisition Apple's ever made. And why does Apple need a headphone company? Maybe the streaming music, right? I guess. Although I can't imagine that Beats has any deals that Apple can't make. And now the story that Jimmy Iovine, the music producer who runs Beats, and Dr. Dre himself, the rap star, will have executive positions at Apple. Huh? I'm hoping this is just a crazy rumor. You know how Apple rumors are. I think the problem is, you know, Dr. Dre posted on his Facebook page that he is the first rap billionaire, and then he pulled it down. He pulled it off. So I have a feeling maybe, I don't know. Table says Iovine is pronounced Iovine. I-O-V-I-N-E. You know what? There are not people listening in Hollywood. You can tell me how Jimmy pronounces his last name. I cannot imagine. And by the way, HP owns a significant portion of Beats, too. Can't imagine Apple buying Beats for $3.2 billion. Dr. Dre and Jimmy, what's his name, will have significant positions at Apple Computer. Dre has only 25% of Beats, somebody's in the chat room saying. Oh, well, 25% is only $800 million. Aw, shucks. But remember, just remember that Dr. Dre is worth about $400 million or $500 million anyway. So he'll put him over the billion mark. He just bought Tom Brady's mansion in Los Angeles, the Patriots quarterback. Tom Brady built a mansion, I don't think he ever lived in it. He sold it, put it on the market almost immediately for $50 million. And Dr. Dre just bought it for $40 million. But you know, it's worth it because it has a moat around it. And if you're going to live in Brentwood, well, you know, it's not a great neighborhood. You got to have a moat around your house. 8888 Ask Leo. A couple of the big stories we're looking at this week. The end of the internet as we know it via the FCC and or Oracle, Google, via the courts, via FCC, via God. Somebody's got their finger in that pie and they're eating it all. And then Apple, basically the death rattle of Apple, frankly, if they buy Beats. It's like, what? You want to make headphones? 8888-ASK-LEO. What do you think? Time to talk. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. La 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 la. Boom, ba-dee, ba-dee, Dr. Dre in the house. He's mobbing with the. He discovered Snoop Dogg. He discovered Eminem. He discovered. Who else? Dre is like the whoopty whoop rap hero. I just don't get it. I don't understand that. I think it's a flawed rumor. I think it's not true. We'll see. 8888-ASK-LEO. What do you think? Apple buying Beats for, interestingly enough, exactly the same price, according to the rumor, that Google paid for the Nest thermostat. So it's a good deal. And Beats, I don't know why Beats is so cheap. To be honest, they make $1 billion a year. Shouldn't they be more expensive? I don't know. Or maybe the bottom's falling out of the headphone market. They've struggled with the Beats streaming system, music. I don't know. Heather Hamann. Hamana. What do you're a music maven. You love the muse. What do you listen to? Are you eating or something?
No.
Okay.
Just drinking coffee.
Me too.
Loving the new latte machine.
Making copies, drinking coffee.
What do I listen through, you mean?
Yeah. Like, do you have, like, a portable music device?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What is it?
I just use the...
Your phone.
The earphones that came with it, yeah.
And you use the Apple earbuds.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody else.
They're quite good.
They're fine.
They came up quite a notch in the 5S, I think.
They're fine. You know what? Kids today... I'm sounding like such an old guy. Kids today don't know good music. They can't tell. They don't know. There's no market for good music. So I don't think, headphones are very profitable, but they don't buy them for the sound quality. They buy them for the status.
For the looks, yeah.
That B, that little lowercase B on the side, you know. Just like for a long time, a white headphone was a status symbol because it means you owned an iPod, right?
Mm-hmm. There's some good-looking ones. I mean, sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe that would look good while I'm out there skating with a little...
Yeah, the Beats look good. They don't... they sound okay. They got a lot of extra bass. They're good for listening to Dr. Dre.
Oh, okay.
They got a... Boom, boom, boom.
Everyone looks all hip like a DJ, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I think Apple's not doing it. I'm going to go on record. I'm going to be the only one in the world... saying, I think this is a phony rumor. They're maybe down at the table talking to Dre, but I don't know what they're talking about. Doesn't necessarily mean buying the company. Maybe they're thinking about having lunch. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they want to put a Beats headphone in the next iPhone or something. There's all sorts of deals they could be doing.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm wrong all the time, so don't. Who should I talk to first here?
We got to go to Kennan in Toronto.
I don't understand finance, business, the markets. I don't understand it. I do understand computers and how they work and cell phones, that kind of stuff. Hi, Kennan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Great show. Love your show.
Thank you.
I also agree with you that Apple rumor, it just doesn't sound Apple-y.
It's not Apple-y. What is that? If it's true, then I got to think Apple's kind of losing its way here.
Yeah, exactly. I had a question, and I appreciate if you could answer it. Somebody recommended to me to use WatchGuard.
WatchGuard for your phone?
No, this is for the Wi-Fi, I guess, for the whole home WatchGuard. And I just don't know. I thought that the Wi-Fi in the house should be sufficient enough. But this Wi-Fi, this WatchGuard, I don't know what that is supposed to do. Would you recommend it?
No, you don't need it. You're at home, or is this a business?
Home.
So this is a wonderful category for a company to make a lot of money in because everybody's very aware of and nervous about security these days. I don't think you need a internet. These are internet security devices. They're boxes you run, basically, as they're firewalls you run in your house. I think it's overkill. Now, I have to say, routers are not very well designed. They're commodity hardware. The companies that make them, like Linksys, don't fix bugs, don't fix security holes. So we know of a lot of problems with routers that exist. But I don't know if these will this will fix it. You'd be better off getting a good router that doesn't have security problems. So I'm just looking. This person said what? That you should do this because you
just for general kind of because you're very vulnerable with just a regular Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it's not really true. A router provides a pretty good firewall. We use this kind of thing. We use a Starro. They call them UTMs, Unified Threat Management Boxes. They sit between you and the outside world, and they do a little more than just a passive firewall, which is what a router is. How expensive are they?
They're like, they start at $400 and then they go up.
Well, I mean, I have yet to get to the point where we would recommend these. I just think that this is probably not necessary unless you feel that you're a target.
No. Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much. I think you answered my question.
Yeah, I think businesses use them, and if you're a business, you probably do need something like this because you are a target just by being a business on the internet. But I think this is probably more than you need. But it doesn't mean you don't have to pay for or pay attention to, I should say, security. What you need to do is make sure that you have a router that doesn't have any major flaws. We're seeing more and more flaws with routers, unfortunately. They're cheap devices, and they're not worth patching, apparently. On the other hand, they provide basic security because a router sits between you and the outside. You always should have at least a router. It sits between you and the outside world, between your computer, your home network, and the outside world, and it rejects anything it doesn't know about. And if you're going to use a Wi-Fi router, here's what I would say. This is what you need to do to make it safe. It's really not very complicated. First of all, do turn off. There are a few things to turn off. The worst is WPS. Now, a lot of routers have this. It's that button you press on the front that gives you automatic configuration. There's a big security vulnerability with that. So turn that off. Now, part of the problem with Linksys is earlier Linksys routers, I don't know if it's still a problem, but for a long time, you'd turn off WPS, but it didn't do anything. It was just like a checkbox. The WPS was still on. And people can still get into your system. So turn that off. Turn off WAN administration. That's the ability to access your router and administer it, change settings on it, from outside your house. Don't let anybody do that. If you need it, turn on, but you know if you need it. And if you do, you have a higher standard for security anyway. So turn off WAN. Turn off WPS. Turn off UPnP. That allows, without your knowledge, a program or device inside your house to configure the router without telling you. Microsoft designed it for the Xbox. It's a bad idea. Turn that off. So WPS, UPnP, and WAN administration. Now you should go in and you should change the router's name. Don't let it be Linksys 04394. Change it to something you know that is not your address or your family name, that is not identifiable information. No point in leaking that out. Change the administrative password and turn on WPA encryption, WPA2 encryption. That's really all you need to do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're rocking in the free world. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mr. Neil Young, one of the proponents of higher quality digital music, along with Dr. Dre. Hard to say that with a straight face.
Yeah, it's hard.
Iovine. I'm told now it's pronounced Iovine, which doesn't make any. It's spelled Iovine. Jimmy Iovine. Anyway, I ought to know, but I don't know. Never did know. Hey, that's Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek. He is host of the Home Theater Geek podcast, twit.tv/HTG, and editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum. What do you think of Beats headphones? You love them?
No.
Well, they're not accurate, but they never pretended to be accurate, right?
No, they never did. Everyone acknowledges that they're very bass heavy, as you
said
earlier.
For listening to rap music.
It's for listening to rap music, exactly. However, I will say...
Or tuba music.
That too.
It would sound really good.
You know, maybe I should
get a player.
Just to listen to my tuba, that's true.
I think you need some beats. They make less expensive ones. They make $300 beats, which at least are a little bit more accurate.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they make little weird, you know, that bullet speaker that you see a lot of ads for and stuff.
Yeah, it's true. Now, I have to say that Beats is often given credit for raising the awareness of wanting higher quality audio playback. You know, the little earbuds that Apple ships with its products are generally considered not so great, at least by people who really want better music fidelity. And so Beats brought to a wider audience, not just this little audiophile community, that, hey, we can get better quality sound out of our iPods or phones or whatever. And that was helped along probably partly because in the first 5 years of Beats, they were manufactured exclusively by Monster.
Right.
So
another company that oversells and underdelivers, shall we say.
Well, shall we say. But they are also ostensibly concerned with audio quality.
I think both these companies are concerned with margins, with profit margins.
Well, certainly, of
course. And they realized and I don't think they opened the floodgate for high quality audio. They made of headphones a status symbol. And if you go to a CES this year or anywhere where they're showing new stuff, they're way overrepresented headphones. And the reason is they're cheap to make. And people will spend hundreds of dollars for $15 worth of parts.
Yes.
And everybody wants to jump on that bandwagon. And it's about marketing. And I think Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre are marvelous marketers. I think this whole thing is a marketing ploy. Trying to look at how much everybody's talking about Beats.
No kidding. No kidding.
So I don't buy it. I mean, if there were nothing there, Apple probably by now would have probably denied it. But they have a relationship. They sell Beats in the Apple store, and maybe they're trying to make a deal of some kind. You know, I'm not saying they're not talking to Beats, but I can't imagine Apple spending $3.2 billion to buy something that isn't really worth that much.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing about Beats promoting or bringing high-quality audio into the wider audience was borne out. I moderated a panel at CES last January about the resurgence of high-quality audio. And, you know, my panelists were people from Sony and Pioneer and Andrew Jones from Pioneer, who's very respectable in high-quality audio. And they both cited Beats as bringing
this
awareness. And then we get Neil Young. We heard Neil Young in the bumper music coming in. And, you know, he's got this Pono project where he wants to deliver digital music with higher than CD specifications. And there's a debate raging on AVS Forum right now about whether or not that really makes a difference that you can hear.
Right.
You know, so there's
that. That's a big question, too.
It's a huge question.
And I think kids... people our age can't hear much anyway. The kids, because they listen too loud, and we because we listened too loud when we were kids.
Right,
and we've
exactly.
lost the high end.
Right. Well, and as people age, you lose the high end anyway, even if you didn't listen too loud as a kid.
You know what's true? We love music. Everybody loves music.
That's right.
Music's great.
Music's great.
Yeah.
But is CD quality good enough? Will the Pono project, which... They're talking about not 16 bits of digital resolution, but 24 bits, which increases the dynamic range.
And as you know, I bought one. I haven't got it.
Oh, that's true. You haven't gotten it yet? Fall.
Well, no, I think it's October.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Well, man, I can't wait to hear what you think about it.
You know what they did that really may make more of a difference? And we've talked about this before. They use high-quality parts, particularly their digital-to-analog converter.
Yes.
That's the thing, the chip in your computer, your sound card. Or sometimes in external boxes that take the bits that are on the hard drive and turn them into audio that the headphones or the speakers can reproduce.
Right. They have to have analog. Yeah.
And the quality of that seems to make more difference in almost anything.
That's right. Plus the quality of the original recording.
Well,
my friend Mark Waldrip, who runs AIX Records, talks about the provenance of a recording. How was it recorded? How was it edited? How did it get delivered to you? Did it get down-resed, down-sampled during the process?
Well, that's one of the little scandals of one of the HD music sites. You can buy high-def music now.
HDtracks.com.
Yeah, apparently they were upselling upsampled tracks.
That's right. That's right.
Which and not only wouldn't sound better, they'd probably sound worse.
Yes, yes. And some people found out by actually running a spectral analysis on some of the files that they downloaded from that site.
As a consumer, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's very tough. It's very tough.
And I think part of that is because you can't really tell. It's like wine. You can't tell. Speaking of provenances, you can't tell the difference.
Well, you can if you're experienced. If you spend the time and educate yourself and listen to stuff. There's a great Philips in the Netherlands has a great site that trains you. That if
really?
You go through its training process, you can increase and improve your acuity, your listening acuity, to be able to hear smaller differences.
And that may be a bad thing.
Well, it may be. This brings up the question of, as a musician, I go to a concert and I'm always listening. Oh, that guy's out of tune. Oh, the second bassoon came in late. Which an uneducated listener wouldn't even notice.
Philips calls it the Golden Ears Training Program.
Exactly. Exactly
pop,
so.
Pop, pop. Goldenears.philips.com. Is it free?
It's very cool, actually. It's free, yeah.
I'm going to have to do this. Although, again, this might be a mistake. Now you'll hear stuff and you'll go, oh, that sounds terrible. When you thought before, you thought it sounded good.
Yeah, exactly. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. In other words, a blessing and a curse. It's a tough one, all right.
What do you like for headphones?
Well, for headphones,
I'm glad headphones are coming back, because when you and I were kids 100 years ago, we would lie on our backs with the album. There's another thing gone. The liner notes, you know, because you had a lot of space on an album. You could there were tons of stuff on there. Wearing our COS Pro 440As or whatever those were.
That's precisely what I had.
Yeah. They weighed 42 pounds.
That's right.
You couldn't get up off the ground because your head was way down with these headphones. And then you'd listen, you know, to Space Jams from the Pink Floyd or whatever. And that was that's music.
That's exactly right.
I think headphones are great. So do you have a
Love them.
Do you have a favorite Grado or Sennheiser or?
Well, these days I'm listening to the BMW P5, which is a portable, kind of a portable headphone, an on-ear headphone that I like very much. Also, PSB makes the M4U.
How much are we talking here?
Well, those are a few $100.
Okay. I think that's one thing that you can credit Beats with. People getting used to the idea that, you know, to get good headphones, you might be spending north of $200.
Exactly. Oppo, believe it or not, Oppo, the Blu-ray player company, just came out with a pair of headphones. I think they're $400 or $500. Everybody's raving about them. I haven't tried them yet. I can't wait to
Where
try
is the site that you can go and learn about headphones?
Oh, innerfidelity.com and head.fi.org.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy. Thank you.
You bet.
Head-fi. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's kind of hard to escape the feeling that if you spent $1,000 on a headphones or you spent, you know, $10,000 on a stereo, you would imagine it sounded better. You would have to, right? You would have to say, look, I spent so much money, it must sound better. And then you would believe it. What happens if you spend $3.2 billion on a headphone company? You have to think it's better. Ooh. Sound good. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona, and Spin. Hi, Spin.
Hi, Leo. So I would like to thank you first. You helped me actually buy my last DSLR, and I've been using it for well over 5 plus.
By the way, I got your name wrong. Is it Shrin?
Yeah, Shrin.
Sorry about that, Shrin. So what did you buy?
Well, I bought a Canon DSLR, like a 40D, in 2008.
Sweet.
And I used it.
Go ahead.
And I used it for quite a while now, and I've actually used it for so long now. Now I've actually put it up for sale. I'm looking to switch to a mirrorless setup.
Yeah.
I'm kind of tired of carrying all the lenses and the body and the tripod and all this stuff.
Yeah, I think mirrorless is the way to go. Now, there are two kind of camps on this. One is the Micro Four Thirds, which is a small sensor, relatively. But the Micro Four Thirds system is supported by a number of manufacturers. There's a broad, broad range of lenses and body choices. I happen to like the Olympus OMD, and they make two. They're around $1,000. These are less expensive. They're lots lighter. On my last trip, I took an OMD, and I loved it. The EM5 is the one I took, and now they have an EM1, which is the high-end version, and it has Wi-Fi built in. It's a beautiful camera. So I wouldn't hesitate to recommend that. The other direction is to go with Sony, and I think their NEX cameras are superb. And they even make a full frame. So the NEX cameras, I think, are APS-C sensors. So they're bigger than Micro Four Thirds. But then you're all Sony, you know. And then they make the A7s, which are full frame sensors. And to my knowledge, these are the only reasonably priced full frame sensors with no mirror. No mirror means much simpler operation, no big chunk. The camera body can be a whole lot smaller because it doesn't have to contain that mirror and all the mechanism to move it around. The mirror is what you look through in a single lens reflex, an SLR. You look through the viewfinder, and the mirror, it's actually a kind of a prism device, a one-way mirror. Mirror lets you look through the lens. So when you're looking through the viewfinder, you're seeing exactly what the lens sees. That's wonderful. Now, if you take away the mirror, yes, you reduce size and complexity and cost, but you have to figure out some way to see what the lens sees, and they do that with a video camera, a little video tap. And I don't think the quality is as good, so you should try these to make sure you can live with it. It's no longer an optical viewfinder. It's a video viewfinder, and so the resolution is a little lower. It does mean they could put more into the viewfinder. You know, there's a lot more information in the viewfinder. It's kind of like the back of your camera. But I have to say the Alphas, the A7 and the A7, I have an A7R, are beautiful, beautiful cameras, give you great results. They're just very few lenses for them. And if you buy a lens adapter, be prepared for very slow focusing. You almost have to use manual focusing. So there's
Have you heard anything about the Fuji mirrorless cameras?
Now, Fuji makes some Micro Four Thirds, I believe. So are these Micro Four Thirds or another format?
They're their own things.
So I've liked the Fuji cameras a lot. I think they make very good cameras, too. The problem, again, is the only standard in this is Micro Four Thirds, but a lot of people don't think that the sensor is too small. And, you know, as I've mentioned before, a big sensor on a camera, on a digital camera, lets in more light, gives you more pixels, gives you more accuracy. It really makes a difference in the quality of the image. I don't know what size your 50D is. I would guess it's APS-C. We have these. It's so confusing. We have all these different. You think they just give you in inches? How big is it, or millimeters, or something? No, we got the APS-C. We've got full frame, which is effectively a 35mm. We've got Micro Four Thirds. So Fuji is APS-C, but it's an X mount. Okay, so it is. That's a APS-C is something you're kind of used to, and I think probably the minimum you'd be happy with. Going backwards to Micro Four Thirds might be disappointing. Does Canon also have a mirrorless? I think it does. Does it not? I think they've added a mirrorless to the bunch. But everybody will at some point, because this is becoming a hot category. I think that both Canon and Nikon are going to be slow to the party, because they've got such an investment in DSLRs. Yeah, Canon does make a EOS M. I don't know much about it. I tell you what, I bought the Sony NEX. Bought it for my son. He loves it. It's a great camera with lots of lens choices. If you want to go full frame, the A7 is a very, very good choice. But mirrorless is nice. I really like mirrorless. It's so much lighter. I recently went back to my 5D just for some special stuff I wanted to shoot in. It's so heavy. It's like you feel like you're carrying a child around. So I'm not sure I have a perfect recommendation for you. If you want to stick with your Canon lenses, I don't know if you've bought a lot, then you would want to look at the EOS M and the M2. Anthony in Laguna Niguel, California. Hi, Anthony. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, good day, Leo. Happy Saturday.
Good day to you too, sir. Thank you.
All right. I have a Galaxy S3, and I cannot send picture photographs to Australia. T-Mobile can't fix it. I've been on to them.
It's an MMS issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've had that issue sending MMS, that is, MMS is you know, media files, pictures, audio, video, instead of just plain text, overseas as well. And I think that that's just a restriction of the carriers in Australia. In my case, it was Mexico.
No kidding.
Can you just email it?
I don't know how to do that.
You know, a couple of things. First of all, you need on your smartphone an email program, obviously. And you can, in most cases in the gallery, when you have choices of ways to share it, one of the ways will be email. But here's a handy little tip. Most carriers, I don't know if this will work in Australia, but most carriers, certainly in the U.S., will accept email. You'll have to go online, and if it's Telstra or somebody, look what their system accepts. But for instance, for AT&T, I think it's the phone number at txt.att.net, something like that. And right. and that's an email address that will appear as a text message on the phone. So okay. There may be ways to get around this, but worst case, you know, you can always email it. The chat room's giving me a link. T-Mobile's got a link to MMS. That's the technology you need abroad. And, I think they're saying the same thing, which is that it's essentially incompatibility.
Right. So, but my business partner in Australia can send me photos all the time.
Yeah.
He goes through Telstra, but I can't send photos to him. It won't accept.
So if you have, let's see, to send and receive, this is T-Mobile's website, send and receive MMS messages to and from international phone numbers. It says here that AT&T will work with Optus and Telstra in Australia.
Okay.
So, and what did T-Mobile tell you when you talked to them? Is it Optus or Telstra? You said it was Telstra?
Yes, Telstra, and I'm with T-Mobile, and their tech department. I went up the ladder with them, and I spoke to their top people, and they said, well, maybe we don't have a contract with them.
Yeah, maybe they had one, and they lost it. On their website, it says you can, but, if you can't, then you can't. And I guess my message is it's not unusual, but there are alternatives. Email it. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. I'd love to talk digital photography, too. I've been taking a look at this Fuji X-T1, which is the camera that our caller was asking about, the mirrorless camera. Looks pretty sweet. Looks pretty nice. It's an APS-C size sensor. For a lot of people, that's a big enough sensor. That's a nice size sensor. It's a little pricey. With the body alone is $1,300. It's bigger than Micro Four Thirds, but it is mirrorless, so it's compact. I don't have a lot of experience with Fujifilm interchangeable lens cameras. But any excuse, I'll buy a camera. I love playing with those. 88, I'm not a good photographer, so I make it up by buying more cameras. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. Diego's in Corona, California. Our next call. Hi, Diego. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. I'm a big fan.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us. What can I do for you?
Okay, so I bought a MacBook Pro in January 2013.
Yes, sir.
And so, you know, I needed an update because I had an old Dell. So, anyways.
Nice choice, I think. Are you having trouble with it?
Well, the thing is you know, I do a lot of gaming, and I play a lot of League of Legends. And the problem is it makes a really weird rattling noise through the center of the keyboard.
You have a bad fan.
Do you think it's the fan?
Yeah. Does it come and go? Does it go up and down? Or is it always there?
No. Well, I feel like it only comes up when the laptop kind of overheats.
Yeah, it's a fan. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's a fan. It's either a bad bearing or it could be that the fan blades are a little off center. But it's how old? A year old?
Yeah, it's about a year old.
Get it in there before the year runs out because it's under warranty unless you bought AppleCare.
Well, honestly, I use the Best Buy Geek Squad protection plan.
Oh, well, bring it in, because that's what's wrong. It's the fan.
Well, Yeah, well, sadly it expired, but that's
my of course. Yeah. Laptops, I'll tell you the thing about laptops is, unlike desktops, they get carried around, they get shaken around, they take a little bit more of a beating than a desktop computer system. And the fans in there, sure, that's something that could easily get kind of knocked loose or something. Probably not an expensive repair. It means taking the old one out and putting a new one in, and fans are cheap. So I would guess that that's not going to be the most expensive thing to do, but you're going to, I would get it fixed. For one thing, you don't know if that fan's hitting something. That rattling sound could be bad bearings, but it could also be the blade hitting a wire. And, that's the case, you don't want to lose the rest of the computer. So I wouldn't waste much time trying to fix it. I mean, not fix it. I would get it fixed as quickly as possible, Diego. That sounds like a bigger problem. Waiting to happen. Bob in Barkersville or Bakersville, North Carolina. Hi, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. I'm kind of a novice, but I've been listening to your show the past year or so, and I'm slowly learning. But
all right. By osmosis, that's the plan. We just sink right through that brain of yours.
Well, I listen to you on KPHX, and here it comes on. It's like 9 to 12 at night.
Excellent. Well, time. Tell you what, ask your question now, and then tonight you can get the answer.
Okay. this problem, when I was listening to you last week, you mentioned the problem with the Internet Explorer browser, a security problem.
It's a nightmare browser, yeah.
Well, anyway, so I switched over to Google Chrome in terms of browsing.
Yeah.
And I also... on my own, as you suggested, I got rid of Adobe Flash Player, Adobe Reader, and then on my own.
By the way, the only reason I say that is because these seem to be, those are two applications that get anything that gets run when you're on the internet, and those are two applications that do. If you go to a page that has Flash or PDF content, that's what's going to run. Those things are targets for bad guys, and Adobe seems to have a lot of security issues with both Reader and Flash. The nice thing about Chrome is it has Adobe Flash, but it's built in. It's kept up to date. I think it's safer to use it sandboxed inside the tab that you're on. So I just feel like it's safer to use Flash that way. And you still have to use it. A lot of sites require it. Reader, there are other choices that are probably not much more secure, but they're just less attacked by the bad guys because most everybody uses Adobe Reader, so the bad guys figure, hey, this is a good bet.
Okay. But the problem I've had since then, it may have had something to do with something I clicked on that I shouldn't have, I don't know. But this only happens on the Internet Explorer browser when I'm on the homepage for MSN or AOL.
Yeah.
They have these pictorial news items, have like one to three pictures. You click the arrow, the next two to three. Well, anyway, on the Internet Explorer browser, I can't click on those arrows. They're either not there or when I click on them, it doesn't move the frame.
Huh.
Whereas on Google Chrome, it's working still.
If those are frames, and I'm not sure, but if those frames are Flash and you got rid of Flash, that would explain it.
Well, no, I went ahead and put the Flash back in.
Oh, all right. Didn't fix it. Okay. That was a good test. I'm not sure, frankly, what's going on there. It doesn't sound like it's necessarily malware, which is obviously what you're worried about. It's hard to say. So there are things, for instance, if you download software from download.com or other sites like that, sometimes they're wrapped in downloaders that will install toolbars into your browser, like the Ask toolbar, things like that. It might be that there's a toolbar in Internet Explorer or something, they call them browser helper objects that are launching whenever you launch Internet Explorer. So what I'd like to do is have you run Internet Explorer kind of in something we call, like safe mode, basically. That is, without any extensions, and see if you still have the same problem. What version of IE are you using?
Yeah, I just updated about the past month to IE 11.
Okay. This, they changed how safe mode works, unfortunately.
Well, that might have been where I caught the problem. I'm not sure, but I looked it up under Google Chrome, IE 11, and I thought I was on the IE site, but it turned out I was on CNET site, and so I actually downloaded the IE 11.
Yeah, CNET site will do it. Never, ever get anything from anybody but the original creator. In this case, Internet Explorer, absolutely get it from Microsoft. If it's on CNET's site, I have all sorts of suspicions.
Yeah, well, I did it accidentally, and then I actually...
Yeah, it's easy, and that's why they do it. It's easy. You do a search for Internet Explorer. First thing that comes up is download.com. Not, it should be Microsoft.com. So I agree. That's kind of an issue. What you can do is your Windows 7, Windows 8?
7 HP.
So you just search for Internet Explorer, and you'll see a version that says no add-ons. That's probably the easiest way to do this. After
I did the CNET thing, I went ahead and got rid of it, and then I went to the Microsoft site. And
yeah, but you know, the thing that came along with the download is still there, right? Not
right, right.
So I suspect that's what's going on. Now, the good news is, because CNET doesn't want to get accused of putting malware on your system, The only thing to distinguish these browser helper objects and toolbars from malware is that they have an uninstall capability. So you can go to your programs and features control panel, look for anything odd. You'll know what's, you know, you'll know what you installed. Anything that you didn't install, look for, and it'll say things like, you know, search tool and things like that. So you want to uninstall those. That might be the easiest way to get rid of this. They're not really malware because they will uninstall. But they're certainly not friendly, and I would get rid of them. Try running Internet Explorer without add-ons. See if things work better. That conduit, search for that one. That's a biggie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Speaking of routers, did you see this whole foofrawl over a router company wanting to sue a guy who reviewed it badly on Amazon.com. Amazon has kicked the router company off for threatening, but it does bring up an interesting point. They may actually have had a legal case. So they wanted to sue for libel because the reviewer said things on the Amazon review that he couldn't prove were true. The router company, MediaBridge Products, sells a router called MediaLink. Not a big name router. I don't even know anybody who uses it. But the reviewer posted a review on Amazon in which he said that the router company was making up reviews, putting fake reviews up, and that the router itself was not made by the company, but just a rebranded router. Attorney contacted the reviewer on Amazon and said, "We're going to sue you for libel because you can't prove either of those assertions. They're not true." Now, Amazon has revoked the company's selling privileges. The reviewer has taken down his libelous assertions. But he also posted a post on Reddit in which he said, "Help me, I'm going to be sued for this review. What should I do?" And that kind of annoyed MediaBridge as well. Their lawyer said he's been building a campaign to harm MediaBridge. He wrote on Amazon, the reviewer, "Never in my life have I been so relentlessly bullied by a company." And Amazon's response is to take MediaBridge off Amazon, which actually is a pretty hefty penalty. Nowadays, if you're not on Amazon, sometimes it's hard to sell anything at all. It brings up an important point, though. I guess really it doesn't matter where you libel somebody. If you libel them, you could be sued. What is libel? Well, I mean, if you're not a lawyer, it's complicated. But essentially, my understanding is, having worked in many a network and been told what not to do, you can express an opinion. I can say, "Heather, you're a dumbbell." And that's not libel, believe it or not, because it's not provable one way or the other. It's not a statement of fact. It's an opinion. You could say, "These MediaBridge routers are terrible. I hated it." You can say anything that you know to be true. "It didn't work in my house. I couldn't get a refund." If those things are provably true, not libel. Where you get in trouble is asserting something as a fact that isn't proved, that you cannot prove true. That's libel. So if you assert without any knowledge that they've been faking the reviews, you could say, it seems to me, it's, I suspect maybe that'll let you off the hook, but you can't assert as fact something that's not true. You can't prove true. They could sue you. So be careful when you write reviews. It's so important. I think, you know, Yelp and Amazon reviews are so valuable. I use them all the time. I will not buy a product without reading the reviews. But I think you got to be a little careful when you're writing those reviews, just as I have to be careful when I'm saying things. I could say, well, in fact, this is what the lawyers told me. Not a long time ago. I think I said somebody was an extortionist. And they said, now that they can sue you for. That's slander. Because it's either a fact or not. And if it's not, then you're going to get sued. You can say their behavior is extortion-like. You could say they're dumbbells. I hate them. Those things are all safe. So be a little, I guess we have to be careful for. Even in a review, we got to be a little, you wouldn't think, but now you're in public, right? You're in public eye. So I just thought I'd mention that. And I guess kudos to Amazon for wielding their mighty power. Now, Amazon is also wielding its mighty power against a book publisher, Hachette. I don't know if you've gone to try to buy a Malcolm Gladwell book, for instance, on Amazon. He's published by Hachette. I guess Amazon and Hachette are having a little feud. Amazon probably, although we don't know, trying to get a better deal from Hachette. Hachette probably, although we don't know, saying, But for whatever reason, Amazon is saying 2 to 3 weeks delay getting these books, raising the price, lowering the discount, things like that. And a lot of authors are saying, this doesn't cost Hachette as much as it's costing me. So there's an example of Amazon wielding its power. Let me just see. Here's Outliers, the Malcolm Gladwell book on Amazon. It says this book will be available in the ships in 2 to 3 weeks. Two to three weeks. Hachette says, "Well, no, we sent them boxes. I tell you, boxes." No, we're out of stock, 2 to 3 weeks. Now, I don't know how you prove it one way or the other. But these things can happen. And this is one of the problems. For a long time, Amazon was a godsend to publishers. It was an alternative that they could go to if Barnes & Noble or Borders were asking for too much money. The publishers could say, well, we're just going to sell it on Amazon. Unfortunately, Amazon's been so successful that most towns don't have a bookstore anymore. Do you have a Barnes & Noble? I know you don't have a Borders. They're gone. So, Barnes & Noble's, I guess, still around, but who knows for how long. Now that they've got an effective monopoly in many places, Amazon can throw their weight around. So sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's nice that they throw their weight around. Sometimes maybe not so nice. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones. I'm getting old. I can hardly read this. Brent in Murrieta, California. Hi, Brent. I'm getting a lot of echo back. I'm not sure why.
Oh, hang on
with that. Am I on a speakerphone?
How's that?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. So my question is that I'm trying to set up sort of a cloud storage for my house. My wife and I she uses a Mac and I use a PC, and I kind of want a central drive in the home that has our music and movies on it and things like that. So I want to know what your opinions are on the network storage, the NAS storage versus like a Western Digital cloud drives and things like that.
They're fine. You know, the whole idea of a NAS, basically the Western Digital is a NAS. The idea of a NAS is it is a lot of storage that is headless. It doesn't have a computer monitor, doesn't have a keyboard, doesn't have a mouse. You get to – it's on your network, though, and you get to it by surfing to it in a browser, and you can configure it. And, you know, fancy NASes like the Synology or the Netgear have more features the simple stuff like Western Digital has fewer. I've got something I might recommend, though, for you that's a little different. Okay. Hang in there after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That big old jet airliner. Going to bring Johnny Jet, our travel guru, to us in a moment. He's on a beautiful cruise ship somewhere in the middle of nowhere. But before we do that... Oh, somebody put him on anyway. Hold on, Johnny. Hold on, because I'm talking to Brent and Murrieta about cloud storage. And so the Synology makes great NASs. I really like them. But I would also take a look at this transporter. I've been using this. I've used it for some time, and I think they've gotten better and better and better. They have two devices. One doesn't have any hard drive. So if you've got a USB hard drive lying around, who doesn't these days? You can plug it into this transporter puck. And it will do what you want. It'll be visible on the whole network. The puck is $99, so that's the price is right. But it has another advantage, which I really like. You can use it as cloud backup. If you have two transporters, which I do, I have one at home and one at the office, they'll securely sync with each other. Now, you don't care about that for your media files. That's what you don't want to do. They're too big. But you can separate it, say, have a folder on the transporter that syncs to your computers and syncs as a backup or just as a kind of common document storage to work. And I use it for that, and I find it really great. So this is a fairly inexpensive way at $99 to take if you have an old hard drive lying around, an old hard drive. I think it's a good way to go. The Western Digital, very similar, but they're a hard drive company, so you're basically buying a hard drive from them. But it's very easy to use. And, you know, many routers these days have USB ports that you can connect a drive to. So if you're getting a new router, just get one that supports a network drive, and that'll do it too. The advantage of doing that is you just take that drive, you copy all the media files over to it, then plug it into the router, and now it's visible to everybody.
Okay.
That's probably... So
do you recommend that over, like, let's say, because a NAS
is a lot more expensive. It'll have things like RAID to protect your data. Do you really care? No, you've got copies elsewhere, right?
Right.
It will have the ability to serve as a media streaming device, which you might want if you want to have an iTunes server, for instance, if you use that way of playing media back. But nowadays, most computers, if they see a drive on the network with media files on it, they'll play it. You don't need a special server. So I think for many people, NASs are overkill now. The only real reason to get a network-attached storage is for the RAID 5, for the redundancy, the ability to make a giant disk out of multiple independent disks. And if one of them dies, you can swap it out, things like that. And you pay a lot for that feature.
Yeah, it's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Look at the $99 transporter, or get the Western Digital, or just get a router with a USB drive, USB hub. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Look who's here. It's JJ, Johnny Jet, our travel expert. He travels the world so you don't have to. No. He travels the world so he can learn all about it, so you can save money. Where are you today, Johnny?
Right now, I'm sailing on Windstar, their new Star Pride ship between Elba, the island of Elba, to Rome. So I'm just going by Sardinia right now.
I'm so jealous.
Not too shabby.
Yeah. So Windstar, if I remember, they look like sailboats.
They do, except this is a new ship that does not have sails, and they actually got it from your favorite company, Seabourn.
Oh.
And so it's a new ship for them. It holds 212 people.
Oh, that's nice.
106 suites.
Oh, that's nice. I like the small ships.
Nice and small.
They can go into ports that, like Elba, that big ships around,
but
can't.
I got a good website of the week for you.
All right, fire away.
Yeah, actually, that's what it does. By the way, we started in Barcelona, then we went to some really small ports in France.
Oh,
Canary, like Canary, but with an S.
Yes.
And then Sète, and then Portofino yesterday. I mean, just really nice ports and ships.
Stop it!
But since we're on the ship theme, I thought we'd talk about a CO, boatbound.co.
Oh, you're gonna have to say it again because the are you on a satellite phone, Johnny?
I am. I'm on a satellite phone.
We're talking to Johnny through space.
Bound.
it's costing $8 a minute, so send me the bill, okay? So tell me the site again.
That's right. Boatbound, BOATBOUND.CO.
CO, not com. CO is the...
Did you get that?
Yeah. Rent boats from real people. Right. This is good. I always wanted to be on a boat.
An Airbnb?
Yeah. I love this.
They're supposedly the first fully insured peer-to-peer, and peer spelled P-I-E-R, if you get the little words on play.
Yeah.
In a boat rental marketplace in the world. So you can rent it for anything, and their whole mission is to spread the ahoy, which is pretty funny.
So you can start with a kayak for $50 a day, or go all the way up to your own private yacht for $900 a day. Hey, this is awesome.
Yep, so it's a great way to, you know, you can rent a boat or you can rent out your boat if you have one. And they have over 13 million registered users.
Awesome. Johnny, you're on your way to Italy. Have a wonderful time.
I'm with my dad, and we're looking forward to it.
All right. And, at $8 a minute, though, I'm not going to keep you on hold. On hold much longer. Thanks, Johnny. Enjoy your trip. It's great to talk to you. His website, johnnyjet.com, johnnyjet.com on the web and on Twitter, at Johnny Jet. And he's really a great resource. I wished we'd had a better connection because I wanted to ask him about booking cruises. Because you can nowadays, you go online, you can book anything. But I think I remember him saying it's better to use that's one of the few things it's better to use a travel agent for. Tell you what, next week I'll be asking Johnny Jet about that. He has such great recommendations. One of the best travel websites and one of the nicest guys, johnnyjet.com. Back to the phones we go. Mark, Riverside, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just recently bought a Canon 6D camera. I'm looking for a computer that would that you'd recommend for photo editing and stuff. I'm currently using a HP computer that's older.
I love going with a Mac. I have to be honest with you. Lightroom, which is the program I would recommend, works on Windows or Mac. That's a wonderful program. The reason I like Mac, a couple of things. First of all, you hear people call with Windows problems all the time, especially viruses and malware. It's just unheard of on a Macintosh. And I see people suffering so much using Windows. It's hard for me to say get another Windows machine. Mac also has, even the laptops, better, if you get Apple monitors, better color accuracy. Unless you spend a lot of money on a Windows PC and you pay special attention to the monitor. In general, the cheap monitors that come with cheap PCs are not accurate and bad for photography. Almost all the photographers I know use Macintosh. There's another reason that I really like, but it's going to require getting an iPad. Lightroom has now come out on the iPad. It's a free app, but of course you have to buy an iPad and you have to have Lightroom on your desktop. But for a photographer who has to go through a lot of photos, I love it. What you do is you take on your desktop, you take photo collections and you say, share those with my iPad. And you can now, so when I come home and I've shot a lot of photos, I can say, make that a collection of my shoot today. And then I can go sit down in an easy chair with the iPad and go through those photos, do some basic editing, which is automatically synced back to the desktop. But more importantly, reject and pick photos. And it's a great way. An iPad is a great way to go through a lot of photos fast. So to me, the perfect setup for a photographer, a Macintosh desktop or laptop, tied to... with Lightroom tied to iPad Lightroom. That is a dream setup. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Paris is on the line from Illinois. Westmont, Illinois, to be exact. Hi, Paris. Hello, Paris. Oh, wait a minute. I gotta push that button. Hi, Paris.
Hey, can you hear me?
I hear you great. Welcome.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had a question. I have the iPhone 5, and I want to see if I could. I have Sprint iPhone, and after 90 days, Sprint said that I could unlock my phone, and I talked to them. Is it possible to have a fully unlocked Sprint iPhone?
If they unlock it, yeah. Have they unlocked it?
They said they've unlocked it, but this is only international.
Sneaky, huh? So what it is the iPhone 5 and 5S have their CDMA on the Sprint and Verizon network, but they also have an LTE chip. And you can pop that chip out and put in a T-Mobile SIM, and I believe it will work if they really unlocked it. What they're saying to you is, well, we didn't unlock the CDMA, but we unlocked the SIM card. So if you travel overseas, you can pop in a SIM card from another country. But I'm not sure, but I would, if you have a friend with T-Mobile, borrow his SIM card, pop it in, or AT&T, pop it in, see if it works, and I bet it would work.
My question to you is, if they told me it only worked internationally, is there a way to have it be fully,
Well, I think I don't know what they're saying exactly. When they say it's only international, I think what they're trying to say is, we didn't unlock the CDMA part, so you couldn't just go over to Verizon and use it as a CDMA phone. But you can use it as a GSM phone because we unlocked the LTE chip, the GSM chip. My guess is it would work on AT&T or T-Mobile. But I wouldn't want you to, go out and get an account unless you try it first. But I think that's what they're saying, and that what they don't want you to know is, but by the way, it would also work with any GSM carrier.
Okay, then I was a bit confused.
You're not confused. They're trying to confuse you. They're trying to, I suspect, obfuscate the fact that it will work in the United States. But what they should say is, we unlocked the GSM, the LTE chip. We didn't unlock CDMA. Who do you want to move it to?
I was going to T-Mobile and seeing if it would.
Yeah. I'm not sure, but I would try it with a T-Mobile SIM. The T-Mobile guys want you to move over there. They will know if it'll work or not. You try it. Bring it to the T-Mobile store. Say, hey, I'm just curious. Can I use this? They unlocked it, but they said it's international only. My suspicion is that'll work on T-Mobile.
My opinion is this carrier needs to be more open about unlocking policy.
I know. Cell phone companies come from monopoly, remember? They were all monopolies. Verizon was, AT&T was, Sprint was. They were all monopolies, and so they don't really understand how to deal with customers. None of them deal well with customers. All of them I'm not saying they lie, but they misrepresent a little bit. Unlimited bandwidth, unlimited data, except that it's only unlimited for the first 5 gigabytes, and then you can't really use it. But that's unlimited because we didn't limit it. They all do that. And I just think it's a little they're not used to telling the truth, I think.
Yeah, there used to be a time 2-3 years back where if you jailbreak your phone, you'll get unlocked right away.
Yeah.
It's not that easy anymore.
No. But what they have done, to their credit, both AT&T and I guess Sprint too, if you're in good standing and you've had the phone for a period of time, will unlock it for you. But it sounds like they don't really tell you exactly what you can do with it. My guess is pretty... But don't get an account yet. But take it to the T-Mobile store and just say, "Hey, can you put a SIM in here? Just I want to see if this will work." Because Sprint said that he'd unlocked it, but I don't know if it'll work. And the T-Mobile guy wants you as a customer, so he'll help you out. Probably,
okay, man.
Probably they already know, because I bet you a lot of Sprint people come in the door. So ask them. All right.
Definitely.
It's not exactly not telling the truth. But when you say that, it's not exactly lying. It's something else. It's spinning. Spinning. There's the word. They're spinning you. They're not telling you a falsehood, but they're giving you a misapprehension. That they're trying to convince you, yeah, but you can't use this in the U.S. because they don't want you to, right? They don't want to lose you as a customer. You can't use this in the U.S. They don't say that, though, do they? They say this is for international purposes. Let me know. Would you call me back and let me know, or send me an email, leo@techguylabs.com, Paris. I'd like to know. By the way, you got a great name. And with a name like Paris, you should have your phones always unlocked for international use. Every time. Hey, I'm Paris. My phone's unlocked. Steve next in Torrance, California. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'm interested in getting one of these internet phone company things. I'm looking at this thing called UMA.
Yeah.
And I'm really concerned about what's going to happen with the way the recent justices' decision.
Well, we're waiting to see. So the issue is open internet, of course. And both Comcast, AT&T, Verizon, they all offer phone service of one sort or another. And we've seen this happen in Canada. It hasn't happened in the U.S. yet, but we've seen this happen in Canada where Canadian internet service providers who are also phone companies make Skype work badly. Make VoIP work badly. They use hardware from a company called Sandvine that says, oh, that's a Skype call. Let's make that stop after 15 minutes. They make sure it doesn't work as well. And I think one of the risks with VoIP is you are relying, when you're using Uma or Magic Jack or Skype or Vonage, you're relying on your internet service. And now, do you have good internet service? It's reliable, high speed?
Yeah, we're with Verizon right now, and I was just thinking about attaching Uma to it and getting rid of my phone.
But remember, Verizon's in the phone business. So,
so they're going to hang me up?
Well, technically, they're not supposed to. In fact, it's illegal for them to, but these companies seem to be getting away with a lot lately. Is it Verizon Fios or is it Verizon DSL?
We have Fios.
Fios. Well, I mean, you know, that's plenty of bandwidth in theory. How does Skype work for you? Does it work well for you?
I haven't used Skype, but
try Skype.
Yeah, I haven't used Skype. I've used
FaceTime.
We have the TV service that we use.
Yeah, that's not a measure. What you got to do is try one of these voice-over internet products: FaceTime on an Apple, Skype on any computer. Those are both free. Make some calls to people who use them and see how it is. If you can live with the quality, don't use video because you're not going to need video on a phone line. Usually the phone lines work pretty well. And I don't know of anybody. I don't know if anybody's having trouble with per se with Verizon Fios and VoIP. Uma is a very good choice. So I understand your concern, and it's at least a theoretical cause for concern. But I don't know if it is a real cause yet. Try VoIP on your line. See how it works. If you like it, go ahead. I'll tell you some negatives of VoIP right after this. Our show today brought to you by our great friends at ShareFile. I use them every week. I just used them today. ShareFile is how I share files. It's a good name, isn't it? With other radio stations. So I'm always sending them audio. I'm sending them ads and so forth. And we've tried all the different ways of sharing files. And, of course, the worst way a lot of people are still using, which is attaching files to email. If you're in business, probably almost half your emails have a presentation or a contract or something attached, right? You know, I say this all the time, no email attachments. Don't accept them. Don't open them. Don't send them. There are a lot of reasons for this. For one thing, and a good reason, it's not secure. When you send a file over the internet, it's like sending a postcard. Anybody can read it. That's not good. But it's also you lose control of it. You don't know if it's going to bounce back. If the file's too big, a lot of email people won't accept it. I think there are better ways. Sometimes also attachments confuse people. Now, I have to send out so many files. If I send attachments, it wouldn't work. So I send ShareFile. ShareFile is so cool. First of all, it's not an attachment. It's a secure link. Let me show you how it works. I'm going to log into my ShareFile account. ShareFile has synchronization software. So when I record audio or I, save something to a specific file, it automatically gets synchronized up to the ShareFile cloud. In fact, you can see this is my ShareFile store. You see I have files in here right now. These are all files that I've uploaded to various people. You'll notice another thing. It's got my Twit logo. It's not ShareFile branded. It's branded with my company, so it has a great professional look. You can give people permissions to access it, and I have done that. But you can also send a file. Let's say I want to send off this file. I'm going to click the send button. I get to set various parameters. I can say how long that file is available for. Can they download it forever or for just a week? When it expires. I can say how many times they can download it. I can have it email me when it's downloaded. I'll get a secure link, and that link, when I attach it to, I just send it in the email, will look so cool. This is what they see. They see my logo. They see a download button. They don't have to sign up for anything. I just love ShareFile. I just love ShareFile. You can use ShareFile to get files from clients, too. If you're in the business of, well, a lawyer asked us, hey, I need to get pictures from my clients, but they don't understand anything about you know, attachments and email and stuff. It's HIPAA compliant, compliant with financial industry regulations and others. You got to try it. You got to try this. Do me a favor. Go to ShareFile.com and click this link up at the top. Podcast listeners, click here. Use our offer code TECHGUY, one word, T-E-C-H-G-U-Y. And then you don't have to, but if you choose an industry, that's awesome because then it'll customize it and it's designed for a variety of industries. It's by Citrix. They know how to do stuff for business. ShareFile.com. Tell your boss, tell your IT guy, use it yourself. ShareFile.com, use the offer code TECHGUY. You can try it free for 30 days. Love ShareFile. Love it. Hey, everybody. Welcome. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and all that jazz. The phone number is 888-827-5536 or 8888-ASK-LEO if that's easier to remember. And the website is techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. Let's get right to the phones. Say hi to Jack in Riverside, California. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Leo. You there?
I'm here waiting for your question because I know you got a good one.
Yes, I do, sir. I used to listen to you back on the screensavers.
Yeah, you didn't. You had to think for a second.
Yeah, I know.
Me too. It's been a long time. I left the show in 2004. So it's 10 years ago.
Man, you ought to start it again. You guys have made a big impact in my life.
If only there were some way we could broadcast content about technology over the internet, it would just be so... Wait a minute, we do. There's a network. It's called twit.tv. We do 30 hours of screensavers-like programming every single week. And I'm on half of it. So tune in. Yeah. Twit.tv, that's my podcast network. What can I do for you?
I got a commission, but I got a question. Actually, I got two quick questions. But
okay.
My main question is, the wife and I are going to Cancun at the end of the month. She wants to get an underwater camera. I'm trying to see. There's all kinds of stuff out there.
I'll tell you the one I used, and I was very happy. It's very affordable. It's from Olympus. It's called the TG. I think of the TG2 is the one I have. Now, it's a point-and-shoot, but you can take it underwater. I mean, she's not going to dive 20 feet, is she?
No, we're just going to go, like, swim with the dolphins or sharks or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I used it for. It's also a tough camera, which is nice because you can drop it. You know, it's great for traveling. It shoots both stills and video. It's quite good looking. I've been very happy with it. I see it on eBay for $250. I see it in other places for a little more, like $330. But it's in that price range. They have it in a variety of colors. I have the bright red one, so I didn't want to lose it. 12 megapixels. It's a point and shoot. But if you get a bigger camera like a DSLR, you have to get a special dive housing, and by then you've spent a lot of money. So this is the way I would go. And I love this camera. Great video too. I was really pleased with the video. Olympus, Olympus, TG2. And I've recommended it to several people. In fact, when my daughter went down to Mexico for a couple of months to study Spanish, I said, hey, take this with you because, you know, it's you could bang it around. The images are phenomenal, much better than a camera phone, but not much bigger than a camera phone. It's very compact. When you turn it off, that covers up the lens so dust doesn't get in. Now, the only negative on all the waterproof and the dustproof cameras, they've got rubber seals around all the connectors. But as far as a camera goes, it works great. Unfortunately, she just got back a week ago, and I said, how'd that camera work out? She said, great. I said, can I have it back? She said, no. She's keeping it. That's all right. I don't have to worry about her dropping it off or the edge of a boat or anything. Lance, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Lance.
How are you? Bienvenue.
Bienvenue. Como ça va?
There you go. Very good. Very good.
Très bien.
I just wanted to say, ask a question about a missing drive icon on the desktop.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's, I know you talk about backing up and for a long, long time.
Do you think the drive is missing or just the icon?
Well, that's what's interesting. I'm running Mac. And it's,
now you know there are settings in the Finder as to whether or not you show drive icons.
Yes. No, this is it's always been there. I have that set up.
And just when you open a Finder window and you go to the Go menu, you can't even see it there.
Right. This is Mac. So it's on the desktop all the time.
No, I understand. But, you know, if you open a window, the Finder, you know, that's that.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. It's not there.
Yeah,
right,
and
right,
you go to the Go menu on the Finder, will list all of the different.
That's right.
In fact, if you go to the computer, you might have to press the Option key. You should see all the drives attached, and you're saying it doesn't show up there.
Doesn't there? Been there for 2 years, and I woke up one morning and it wasn't
gone.
There. Wasn't
is it a USB drive or an internal drive?
This is an external USB Western Digital My Passport 1 terabyte drive.
So first thing to do is try a different cable.
Okay, did that.
Did that.
Exactly.
All right.
Did all the Noble tried different port. Did that.
Okay.
I have two or three running.
Have you tried it on a different computer?
Yes.
No dice. You don't see anything.
No dice, right.
Okay.
So I open up Disk Utility.
Yeah.
And it shows it, but it's dimmed out somehow. It's not completely bright as the other ones. It shows.
Yeah, it's unmounted.
Okay. So then I click, it says, click Repair Disk. And then I click that, and it spins around for about 40 minutes, and then it says, repair failed.
Yeah.
Please reformat.
Yeah.
So then you click reformat.
No! Oh, gosh. You did?
Well, yeah, but this time it was okay. It was
okay.
All right.
Okay. Because that erases everything.
That erases everything.
But you don't care. You just want the drive to work.
I want the drive to work.
There's nothing on it you need.
Well, there kind of was. This was one of my backup drives, but it's okay because I have, as you have always counseled, always have more than one.
Right? Good. All right. So, yeah, no, that's good. Well, at least this isn't a crisis. It's not like there's something on there that you can't afford to lose. It does sound like the drive itself has gone to the drive in the sky. The big
drive heaven?
Yeah, the big drive garage in the sky. There are a couple of things that can go wrong with external drives. It could be just the enclosure, the power supply in the enclosure, the circuitry in the enclosure. So sometimes it's worth taking the drive out. It's usually just a couple of screws. Take the drive out and see if you can mount it another way. And if that's the case, then... Oh, you did that. Oh, you're way ahead of me.
Yeah.
And it still didn't mount.
It's interesting because when you click reformat, it says unable to reformat, unable to unmount.
Yeah, this.
And you go through this endless loop.
This happens on Macintoshes. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes the drive partitions can get corrupted, and it mounts it read-only. And I suspect this is a read-only drive.
Well, I guess it is now.
Yeah. But okay, if you can see it
several times, I finally did it.
Yeah.
And it said, this is reformatted. Uh-huh. It's great. And I plugged it in, and now there's nothing.
It still doesn't matter.
It won't even see it.
Yeah. I don't think it ever really did.
Yeah.
I think that's called it's a dead drive.
That's just part of what you say, how drives fail, and that's what I'm experiencing.
Yeah. Well, you did all the things I would suggest, which is eliminate any possible cause except the drive. And at this point, I think it's a dead drive. It's not expensive to replace them. You didn't lose any data.
I'm just curious as how to trouble if there's...
If you had a Windows machine, it would be worth, you know, getting an interface that could plug it in. I've recommended these before. They're $40 or $50. Newer Tech sells a drive interface that lets you take this drive out of the enclosure and make it a USB drive that'll work on Windows. Plug it into a Windows machine and maybe run a program like SpinWrite on it just to see if you can figure out where the drive is failing. But it's kind of hard to know. It sounds like, is it an SSD? It's a spinning drive, isn't it?
It's a solid state drive.
Oh.
It's a USB My Passport Western Digital.
It's not solid state, is it?
No, I mean it spins.
Spins. Yeah. I didn't think it was solid state. All right.
No, right. I used the wrong term. But it's self enclosed. It's almost.
Yeah, yeah. But you can unscrew it and take it out of there.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the Mac doesn't give you a lot of access to it. What you want is something that'll see low level, see that there's a physical media there. And then low-level format it. And I would generally use Windows to do that. Do you have access to a Windows machine anywhere?
Mm, not offhand.
Yeah,
no.
Don't worry about it. The thing I was talking about, the universal drive adapter. Look, if you know, if you want to bring it into a shop, they could do this too. The universal drive adapter lets you hook it up to a PC, and then there are better recovery tools available on the PC. But at this point, I'd say just get a new one. They're not that expensive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's see here. Guillermo in Whittier, California is next. Hi, Guillermo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, Guillermo's son.
Good. That's fine. Yeah, I'll talk to anybody in the family. Is your mother there, your brother, anybody?
My dad's busy, but I figured...
I'll talk to you.
I'll explain.
What can I do for you, Daniel? Yeah.
Bought a computer about a month ago, a new Dell. And so the first thing we did, we had it running on our old monitor. And we had it through AVG or VGA cable?
VGA, yeah.
Yeah, a VGA. And it worked for a day or two. And then... It wouldn't respond, so we just figured it was the cable. We had another cable, and then we plugged it in, and nothing came out. So we had the exact same monitor somewhere else in the garage. We plugged that one in, and it wasn't working. So we figured it wasn't the monitor. So the only way we got it to work was through HDMI on the TV.
So actually, you want to use the HDMI if you can, because it's better quality.
Yeah, but. I think there's something wrong with the video processing or something, because we decided to you know how the power supply tends to go bad, you know, turning it off and on all the time or whatever. We decided to, you know, just keep it on sleep and just switch the input mode on the TV when we wanted to watch TV.
So you're controlling your TV with this as well as a computer.
Yeah, we have the TV running as a monitor, but sometimes, well, I'll watch TV, so we got to change it back to the TV input. And so we put it to sleep. You know, there's a little button you just push sleep. And after, like, if we leave it alone for like an hour, we try to go back. The computer responds, it turns on back, like it turns back on, the mouse has a little light.
But the monitor's not waking up.
Yeah, it says no input. So
yeah, this is not unusual. I think that what you're trying to do with this TV is not exactly what the computer wants you to be doing. You can drive a regular computer monitor over the HDMI port, right?
I'm sorry? What are you
driving with the HDMI connector? The TV or another computer monitor?
It's a TV. It's a TV.
Yeah. But, and it does. And you don't have a problem with HDMI?
No, we were probably going to get a new monitor, like an HD monitor. But
generally, TVs make lousy computer monitors.
Yeah. We were just using this because we didn't have anything else.
Right.
But when we put it to sleep.
I don't think there's anything wrong with the computer. I think that it's a mismatch between the monitor you're trying to use and the computer. The monitor is not waking up when the computer's trying to wake it up.
Yeah, so what we have to do, we have to turn off the computer and then turn it back on.
Or?
We tried unplugging it.
Did you try unplugging the cable and turning the monitor off and on?
Yeah, we...
That didn't work either.
No.
This is not unusual. Sleep mode's always a little tricky, and I don't think this is called a handshake issue. The connection between the computer and the monitor, they handshake to say, hi, computer, I'm monitor, and monitor, hi, I'm computer. And then they agree on how they're going to talk to each other. But with a TV, the computer may not really get the message about exactly how to communicate with the TV. My suspicion is that there's nothing wrong with the computer. The computer operates fine with normal monitors. It operates fine until it goes to sleep. That's just a not an unusual thing. The TV, for instance, doesn't expect a source that's going to go to sleep. It's a TV. What? You went to sleep? What are you talking about? I don't understand such a thing. Blu-ray players don't go to sleep. Why do you go to sleep? So that it's just that it doesn't have the capability of getting it to wake up. I don't think it's the computer. I wouldn't worry about it. Tell your dad. Leo says it's all right. It's not the computer. It's just the monitor you're using is suboptimal, and it's just not waking up. Don't let it go to sleep. Danny in Redlands, California. You're next. Hi, Danny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, thanks for the show.
Sure, thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
It's there a Chromebook that you can boot from flash drive?
Well, all Chromebooks do boot from flash drive, but the internal drive, I presume you mean over the, can boot from a USB drive. Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. No, I don't think so. Why do you want to do that?
Because I want to use Ubuntu on it.
Ah. Yeah, there are ways to use Linux on a Chromebook. Not too difficult, but you'll have to use something... some special software you download. It's actually a guy at Google who made it possible. You cannot just boot up a Chromebook into Linux. Yeah, no, that's not... I don't think they even enable that capability. That part of the reason they do that is they don't... The whole point of a Chromebook is to be safe, secure, and simple, and they don't want you running other operating systems on that hardware. What you should do is look at something called Crouton, which is a lovely thing in a salad, but even better if you want to run Linux, Ubuntu Linux on a Chromebook. Like I said, it's created by a guy who works, I think he works on the Chromebook team. He's a Googler. And Crouton is on GitHub. If you search for Crouton, you'll find a number of articles on how to install Linux on a Chromebook. I don't personally think, you know, if you buy it, did you buy it because it's cheap?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's limited. It's limited. And a lot of people I know run Linux on it. I put Crouton on my Chromebook, and it works great. It's not super ideal, but...
So how does that work? With the Chrome,
you download Crouton and install it on the Chromebook. I'll tell you what. I'll put a link in the show notes to a Lifehacker article that says how to do it. It's pretty straightforward. Okay. You have to put the Chromebook in a developer mode, things like that. But it's not – it's look, I've done it. It's not too complicated. My friend Jeff Jarvis, who is far from a geek, has done it. So you can do it. Chromebooks are – you know, they're actually perfectly capable of running Linux. In fact, the Chrome OS is based on Linux. But I think that Google kind of doesn't – they don't want to sell them as general-purpose computers. They want to sell them as secure, simple computers that don't do a lot of stuff.
Okay.
But I think for a hacker, and you're definitely one, it's a great thing to do. Put Crouton on it. You can go back and forth between Crouton and Ubuntu and the regular Chrome OS, so you get all the capabilities of Linux. But remember, it's a small hard drive. You know, there are some limitations of that hardware, but yeah, you can do it. Crouton. Crouton. Look it up, and I'll put a link, as I mentioned, in the show notes, techguylabs.com, to how to do that. It's pretty easy. 8888 Ask Leo, the website, as I said, techguylabs.com. A great thing for you to know about. Keep it as a resource. You don't have to write anything that I'm saying down. You don't have to, you know, keep it anywhere. Just techguylabs.com. We'll put it all up there for you. More of your calls right after this. Our show today... brought to you by those wonderful people at Prosper.com. Prosper is kind of a neat idea. It is a Silicon Valley's answer to lending, to the big banks, you know. At Prosper, you can borrow up to $35,000 in 72 hours, and you can get your quote within minutes right now if you visit Prosper.com. It's peer-to-peer lending. So it's a marketplace that brings together people with money to lend with people who want to borrow money. What would you do if you thought... gosh, I could have $35,000 in the next 3 days. Maybe that big remodel, or maybe just start a business. Pay off those high-rate credit cards. That's the first thing you ought to do. Fill out an easy online application. Provide a few details. You'll see your rate almost instantly. It will not affect your credit score. I like that. Low fixed-rate loans. They're unsecured personal loans. You don't need any collateral, with multi-year terms available. Prosper is phenomenal. More than 2 million members now, lenders and borrowers alike. And over $1 billion in funded loans. Visit Prosper.com. They're offering Twit viewers a $50 Amazon gift card when you get a loan. Go to Prosper.com/Twit, a special site just for our listeners. Up to $35,000 in 3 days and a $50 Amazon gift card when you get the loan. Prosper.com. Not affiliated with Amazon. For gift card details, visit Prosper.com/Twit. And we thank Prosper for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Ah, musical director Nathan Staten back. You could tell the great music. Thank you, Nathan. Leo Laporte, the
tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Our show today brought to you by my good buddies at stamps.com. You can get postage on demand, you know, right from your computer and your printer. You don't have to go to the post office. Just use stamps.com. I've got a special offer. Visit stamps.com. Click the mic at the top on the right and use my name, Leo. Stamps.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Jose in Buena Park, California. Hi, Jose.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for answering my call. I have a question for you. Trying to put some speakers on a game room, actually my garage. My wife was so kind to leave the TV there. And
you've moved into the garage. I completely understand. Good idea. Call it a game room. I like it.
Okay. And I have a 55 TV Sony, so the TV I think is good enough. I have
good.
A PlayStation 3.
Yep.
But I'm debating on the surround sound. I would like to get the Bose for $5.99, comes with two speakers and a boombox or whatever it's called. Between that one and the or something around that price. With the Yamaha speaker or something.
You really want, especially because you're going to game, if you can get a nice surround sound system, it's great for movies. Because you're in the garage, it's going to be easy because you can, you know, you could take it over. It's not like the living room. You don't have to worry about wires and stuff. You could take it over. You can have great surround. I don't think you need 7.1. I think 5.1 is perfect. Subwoofer is very important. Get a good subwoofer. Do not get Bose.
Do not
get Bose. No highs, no lows. That's Bose. I think Bose, not my favorite. I think it's a great brand name, but I don't think it's the best sound, and it's definitely not your best bang for the buck. Now, our home theater guy, Scott Wilkinson, was, and the chat room's going to help me out because I don't remember the name of this, but I think it was a Pioneer home theater system on Newegg, and I'm just trying to remember the designation because it was designed by one of the great designers, and it was an amazing price for a system. I think, you know, we're talking $300 or $400, less than the Bose. That's right. It was an Andrew Jones designed system. Let me see if I can find this.
Please.
The SB23W, is that right? No, I don't know. Let me look here. They have actually quite a range, ranging from, now you can go all the way up to $500, $489, but I wouldn't be, that's going to sound 10 times better than the Bose. That's tower speakers. It's going to be much better quality. Let me see if I can find this here. That was one of them though, wasn't it? Don't get a sound bar. Let me look and see if I can find this. Andrew Jones Pioneer. I'm just trying to find the model number for you.
Please, I would really
appreciate it. Yes. He is one of the great sound designers, and he's designed some very inexpensive systems. I see several of them. But probably the 5.1 you want is the SPPK22BS. Well, that's nice name. Easy to remember. It's worse than a license plate. Yeah, just remember the 22BS. Or if you can afford a little more, the 52FS. These are 5.1 systems. They have everything you need, and I think they will sound so good. And having a good low bass, is it a cement floor in the garage?
Yes, but we put carpet on it.
Great.
So
get that subwoofer maybe in a corner there. You're going to rock that place. That'll show your wife. Game room. I got a game room. You're going to love it. I think the Bose are overpriced. For the same amount of money you spend for the Bose, you're going to get a much nicer system from get that Pioneer and the Andrew Jones model. The chat room's giving me some links. Let me see if I can find it. I'll tell you what. We'll put those links in the chat room. Yeah, I think this is the one that was a good deal. The SB23W. No, that's a sound bar. I actually don't recommend this one.
Okay.
I do not recommend it. You want all the speakers. You want left, right, center, two surrounds, and a subwoofer. That's 5 speakers plus the subwoofer is 5.1. You will be very, very happy.
Thank you, Leo. Can you repeat the second? Well, both the brand name is Pioneer.
Pioneer is the brand name. And if you go to Pioneer's website and look for Andrew Jones, he's the designer. He's made a number of different systems for them. But I think you're just going to be so much happier than getting the Bose system. And by the way, that's just start you out with the Bose system. You still have to get some more things, I think, to make that really work. You may, with the Andrew Jones, want to get a AV receiver as well. Onkyo, O-N-K-Y-O, or Denon, D-E-N-O-N, are very good and affordable. They'll give you a great sound. Now you're going to rock. Now you can have a dance party in there. You got the sub. Man, you watch movies. Forget that. You're never leaving the garage. Thank you, Jose. Good luck. Don in Mojave Valley, Arizona. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you, Don?
All right. I was an iPhone user. I jailbroke it because, you know, I had a visual problem. It was really good for that. Now
good.
I switched over to the Galaxy Note 2.
Okay.
And I want to figure out how to get my music onto SD card so the Note will read it. I hooked up the computer. And
the key is, if you bought music in the iTunes store with copy protection, you need to get rid of that. But if it's more recently purchased, they dropped copy protection a few years ago. So do you know, are these copy protected? Are they do they have copy protection on them or not?
No, I want to transfer MP3s off of my home computer onto the Note.
No, I understand. I'm just asking the format. So if you didn't buy them at the iTunes store, if they're just
plain, no, I didn't.
Yeah, they're plain old MP3s, no problem. Just copy them over there. Okay. I'll tell you, the recommendation I'd probably give you is to get... You know, the Samsung comes with a music player. It will see, you know, it will see that music. In fact, best thing to do to help you with that is to put one song on that thing through the phone, maybe download a song, and see where it puts it. You'll have the choice of putting it on the SD card. It'll create, I believe it creates a music folder. And once you've got the folder, then you know exactly what folder to put the stuff into.
There you go.
There's also a great program called Double Twist, which works on the Mac. It goes on both your phone and on the Macintosh, and it allows you to use Wi-Fi syncing. So you can have all your
PC.
Oh, you got a PC. Double Twist works there, too. Allows you to work to do a Wi-Fi syncing, and that's really nice. I just assumed because you were using an iPhone, you were using a Mac. Dumb of me.
No, sorry.
That was dumb. Double Twist works on both sides, and it's great, and it's free.
All right. Thank you, sir.
That simplifies it. But, yeah, you can. The thing is knowing what the file structure is, you know, knowing where the Samsung phone expects music to be. And I should probably just look. But I'm betting it's just a folder called music on the root directory of the SD card, just the music folder. But they've, you know, sure way to do it is to download a song on the phone using the music player, look where it put it on the SD card and put everything else there. And it'll find it all, opens it up, plays it. And since they're not copy protected, nothing to worry about. If you'd had copy protected music that you'd bought in the iTunes store, then it's worth getting the $25 iTunes match. It's $25 for 1 year. You could take all of those copy protected songs and replace them with high quality unprotected music now, which is nice. It's very nice. Moving on to George in Encino, California. Hi, George. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I bought recently D-Link N300 router,
yep.
And I'm trying to hook up through USB Epson printer, and it doesn't recognize the USB.
Oh, I got to take a break. Hang on, we'll be right back. Leo Laporte, B-Tech. But first, I want to tell you what to do with your old stuff. We'll have more Tech Guy in a moment, but first a word from Gazelle.com. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. That's the place to sell your used stuff. If you're like this man here and you have a white mustache, what the heck is going on there? And if you have... did your mustache suddenly get white?
Over about the past 4 or 5 months.
I just noticed.
Yeah.
It looks very white. Maybe it's the camera.
It's pretty white. It's a little dark in the center, but otherwise, I gave it 2 coats. And
do you ever use Gazelle?
I have not yet.
Oh, Dick, you must have more. Well, you know what Dick does?
You know, everything I want to get rid of is so old, Gazelle. I keep getting, are you kidding?
He puts it in the warehouse and then pays rent. Yeah. There's only you and Dvorak, the only two people I know who actually rent spaces for their old gadgets. Do not be like this man. Go to Gazelle.com and get rid of it before it's worthless. You know, that gadget, that old phone, the Samsung phone, the tablet, the iPod, the iPad, they're not gaining in value. As time goes by, they're getting less and less. So if you maybe you went out and you bought the new iPad Air and you put the old iPad in the closet, say, well, someday somebody will want this. No, somebody does. Gazelle, $215. That's what they... Now, this quote I just got on my old iPad, that's good for 30 days. So you can even do... You know, don't feel like you're committing. You know, you're not obligated to getting rid of it. Got an old... You know, Henry's old iPhone that he brought in. I could even sell them that. They'll buy broken iPhones and iPads. But let's say it was an iPhone 5, 64 gigs from AT&T. Good condition? Not exactly, but let's pretend it was. 225 unlocked? That gets you a whole new 5S. 185 base price? I tell you. They even tell you how to unlock it. GAZELLE.com. Once you have enough stuff, press the Get Paid button. They'll send you a prepaid box. Postage is paid on everything worth more than a buck. If you forget to wipe the data, don't worry. Their experts will do it. They'll turn it around fast with cash, a PayPal credit, or if you're an Amazon guy, if you buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, get that Amazon gift card. They'll bump it up 5%. They even buy old iPods. You got a Nano? This can't be worth very much. I'm just curious. Seventh generation iPod Nano, fully working with all the buttons intact. No personalization. What, $10, I bet. $9. Hey, it's better than nothing. It's better than gathering dust, better than paying rent. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking to George at Encino. He's got a router. You said the N300 D-Link?
Yeah, N of an NC300.
Does it say it's a printing a printer share? Just because it has a USB port doesn't mean it shares a printer.
I see. Ouch.
Yeah, I think that in most cases that's for a hard drive. And I'm just looking at the site, and I don't see that it shares a printer. So most of the time nowadays what people do is they buy wireless printers. You have an old Epson that doesn't do that. Mm-hmm. There are ways to do it. You can buy a $99 X-Print server from Lantronics. That'll actually put your printer on the network, turn it into a network printer. That's probably the least expensive way. Some routers do support printers, but not all. Just because they have a USB port does not mean that it supports a printer. And as far as I can tell, I'm looking at the website for the N300. I don't see the word printer in there. It's that USB port is in all likelihood just for a shared drive. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Oh, my goodness, look who's here. The fabulous Dick T. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for many a moon. Hello, Dickie D.
Well, how you doing, pal?
He joins us every week to talk about gadgets.
Yes, sir. And I have a fun gadget. I was at the National Hardware Show.
You know, every year you bring back really interesting stuff from that. You wouldn't think they'd have gadgets.
You know what? The National Hardware Show, I didn't find one tool.
It's not about tools anymore.
Stuff for babies, stuff for painting, stuff for the house. And this was kind of the buzz of the show. I mean, it's not like 30,000 press people, you know, like at CES. There are maybe 30 people, press people. But people were talking about, and I'll tell you what it is, and you tell me what you think of it, because I don't own a car. I've never owned a car. But there's a company called iKeyless. And at the hardware show, iKeyless, who says they are the world's largest retailer.
Oh, they have the Swedish meatballs. I love iKeyless. No? The furniture
where
you
put...
It's
IKEA. iKeyless makes the keyless entry remote controls for cars.
Oh.
So what they have come out with is a universal car remote.
This sounds like such a bad idea.
Oh, really?
When you walk down the street and you press it and all the cars open up?
No. When you lose your remote for your car.
Oh, you know, that's expensive.
Yes.
If you have your, you know, remote on a key, like yes. like my Ford has the, it's like $315 to get a new key.
Yes. So they are making a universal car remote coming out in about 3 months that will sell for $49.95.
I presume they say which cars it works with.
Yes, it is almost all cars really? Made between 1995 and 2004.
And how do you key it? How do you code it into the car?
So, Leo, this is, you know, I don't totally understand any of this. So you put, there's a code you get from evidently that comes with the car or something.
Yeah.
So you go in, you put your key in the ignition, you go off to ignition 8 times. Then you press any button on the universal car remote within 20 seconds.
Yeah,
and it now has all the codes for your horn, unlocking
doors,
doing the lights. They are at universalcarremote.com.
Wow.
And you know, I put a tweet out on this and someone said, now you tweet me? My brother just spent $250. Yeah. Yesterday.
They're really expensive.
So this company should do really well. They said that they cover 1,080 vehicles, and the list and all the compatibility is at Universal Car. So
it's like it's like one of those Universal TV remotes for a car.
That's exactly what they say in the press release. If you can program a TV remote, and there in that orange box is
now, are they selling? It looks like they're trying to sell to locksmiths and people. Do they sell to end users?
They're doing yes to the end user. It's $49.95. But if you want to be a dealer, you should contact them.
Right.
And they will make other deals with you.
UniversalCarRemote.com. This is a good idea whose time
is pretty neat, isn't it?
Yeah. I have overpaid for... I lose my keys a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I may buy one because I don't have a car, but it seems like a good buy.
I'm telling you, get one, you just walk down the street and the cars all come on. You're good. You're golden.
Oh, yeah. Which car do you want? Do you want... Let's take a smaller car.
So as Big Ginge points out, you have to have access to the ignition because you have to do that 8 times thing.
Yes.
You can't just walk down the street and do it.
No,
and I want to thank Big Ginge in our chat room because he sent me a Mr. Potato Head.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that was nice of him. Good. Apparently, he heard my sad story about how when I was 8 years old, I collected box tops from cornflakes and sent it in and never got a Mr. Potato Head. And that's made me bitter for the rest of my life. That's why I'm such a bitter old man.
And he does not know that you pull the scam every year with a different item that you want. Yeah, I know. 4 years ago, I never had Lionel trains. If only
I had a universal car remote. Dickie D, stick around. Actually, don't. We're not going to do the Giz Fizz today. You know that, right?
Actually, John was saying, why don't you just... I'm just going to talk to the chat
room. Just do a mini fizz.
A mini fizz while you set up stuff.
Yes, because we're going to do a special...
No celebrity of the week and no...
All right. We're going to do a special show after the radio show. A pilot program we're going to try out.
Airplane.
If you visit gizwiz.biz, you will see Dickie D... And you will see all the stuff he talks about and the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you have to do is identify this little Smurf saw wheel, tell us what it really is, or make up a clever, creative answer. He's got Mad Magazines for both, autographed by Dickie D. Gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Ricardo. We'll talk again next week. Time for one more, I think. Let's see. Deborah. Deborah's in San Diego. Hi, Deborah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's nice to listen to you. It's great to talk with you.
Well, good. Yeah, I'm sorry it takes so long to get to each call. I apologize. Thanks for your patience.
You're welcome. I'm looking for a really good split. I don't like the iPad. I have it. It doesn't work any longer correctly. So I've been looking at the Dell Venue 11 Pro,
okay. And
I actually had an order set up, but they delayed me for 2 months and said they don't even make that right now. So then I went and looked at the Surface Pro 2. That's where I'm at. And so I was hoping to get your suggestion on the right product for me.
Well, let me tell me why you didn't like the iPad.
I'd like a keyboard.
Okay.
I do like mobile broadband capability. It's not necessary, but I would like to have that there since the technology is there.
Okay.
Even if you suggested a laptop, because I may have tunnel vision looking at these things, I was hoping 128 gigabyte. This is from research I've done, but since I'm at a loss now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you're talking the Surface Pro 2, you're talking a lot of money now. It's twice as much as a Macintosh, and it's Windows. You understand that?
That's what I'm looking for is Windows. Yeah.
It also, I don't think they yet, oh yeah, they do. They just started offering the LTE version. All right, that's good news. That means you can use it on the data network for your cell carrier.
On the Surface Pro 2?
Yeah. And this, well, it looks like, yes.
Okay.
Yes, it looks like both the Surface 2 and the Surface Pro. So there's a little confusion because of the Microsoft's naming. The Surface 2 is not a full Windows. It's their Windows RT, their limited version of Windows. But you get better battery life. It costs a little bit less. I think that's a very good choice. That's basically a PC.
Surface Pro 2.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to go if that's what you're looking for. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.